what would you like your legacy to be?
Professionally, apart from my children and their children, I would want to have my poetry read and appreciated on paper as long as there are words and paper. It would make me very happy on my deathbed to believe that in 1,000 years, someone would actually open a book and read one of my poems.
Hidden in the hills of the University of Arkansas campus is a treasure that has gone mostly unrecognized by the people of Arkansas. His name is Miller Williams, and he has written, edited, or translated more than 30 volumes of poetry, literary criticism, and fiction. He became a professor of science, then quite unexpectedly, a professor of literature. He is a man who participated in sit-ins during the Civil Rights Movement and was the inaugural poet for Bill Clinton in 1997. But more than anything, Miller Williams is a man who has contributed to the canon of contemporary poetry. His poetry is a fusion of science and philosophy that is expressed in a plain-spoken style that is accessible to all readers. He was described once as the Hank Williams of American poetry, because while his poetry is taught at Princeton and Harvard, it's read and understood by squirrel hunters and taxi drivers. Miller Williams is a man of distinction, with a unique talent and a unique life, one that is rooted right here in Arkansas.
My parents were both born in 1894 in Northeast Arkansas. They both grew up on farms. They each had a high school education only, which of course, as I think everyone knows, is the equivalent at least of a college education today. They were also extremely and consistently liberal. They were feminists, believed in socialized medicine, were in almost every instance pacifists and integrationists. My father was a union organizer. He was one of the founders of the Southern Tenant Farmers Union.
Southern Tenant Farmers Union, one of the great social movements.
Yes.
During the Depression era.
Yes, it was a union of sharecroppers who were almost white slaves. They not only earned their rights through this unionization, but it was America's first integrated union. And that has always been a medal on the lapel of my father in my heart.
Miller Williams was born on April 8, 1930 in Hoxie, Arkansas, the eighth of 11 children born, but one of only six to survive past childhood. His father, Ernest, was a Methodist minister, and his mother, Ann Jeanette, cared for the children. As a minister's son, Williams' early life was a nomadic one. He lived in five Arkansas towns as he grew up. As a boy, Williams was a member of the Life Scouts, studied the international language Esperanto with his father, and wrote poetry under the guidance of his mother. Growing up in a liberal household, Williams was an open-minded youth who often tested his ideology. In the mid-40s, while living in Fort Smith, Williams went to a basketball game with an integrated youth group. He was only 16 years old, but he wasn't afraid to stand up for his convictions.
We sat on the white side, but there were a circle of empty seats around us, of course. But nobody did anything hostile except to say and shout a few words. As we left, one of the white students, whom I had known, ran up behind us and whirled me around. I was 16. And hit me in the mouth with his fist and knocked out my upper front teeth. I woke up with my head on the lap of my sweetheart who was with us. Her skirt was all bloody. they helped me home and told my father what happened, my parents what happened, and he wanted to give me the Purple Heart.
That story might say more about William's parents than him, but it also says a lot about the environment in which he grew up. Whether standing up to bullies or writing a sonnet, Williams never had a problem expressing himself. In 1947, Williams was 17 years old and entered Hendricks College to pursue his passion for literature and writing. But his academic life would take an unexpected turn not long after he arrived.
I entered Hendricks and declared a double major in English and foreign languages. And at the end of my first semester, the head of the psychology department called me in and said to me, "Mr. Williams, the aptitude test you took when you entered Hendricks indicates that you have absolutely no verbal aptitude. And if you don't want to embarrass your parents, you will change your major to the hard sciences immediately, because that's where your aptitude lies." I was taught to trust those in charge and to obey my superiors. So I changed my major at the end of that semester to biology.
While Williams maintained his interest in literature and writing, his academic career followed the sciences. He received a Bachelor of Science degree in biology and a master's degree in zoology. While enrolled in a graduate program at Louisiana State University, he met his first wife, Lucille Day, who was studying to be a concert pianist. In 1951, he was married and starting a family of his own. Over the course of the next decade, Williams taught science and biology at universities around the South, welcomed his three children, Lucinda, Robert, and Karen, into the world, and continued writing poetry, publishing his first collection in 1952. By the end of the 50s, Williams was living and teaching in Macon, Georgia, and pursuing his PhD in physiology.
I was teaching at Wesleyan College in Macon, Georgia. It's, as you can understand, a Methodist school. And Flannery O'Connor lived just a few miles away on a farm, one of our great short story writers. She gave a talk and reading at Wesleyan, after which I introduced myself to her and we began to chat, became good friends after a while. And every couple of weekends, I would drive over to her home and take Lucinda, my daughter, who was about five, with me. And Flannery would let Lucinda chase her peacocks, which she kept on the farm. And Flannery and I would talk about her stories and my poetry. I said, "Flannery, you call them short stories, but to me, they're like long poems." And she said, "You call them poems, but I think they're like short stories." And she asked me why I was teaching biology when I had read everything there was to read in English literature and published more poems and stories than I published anything in biology. And I told her the story of why I changed my major. And she said, "Well, you ought to be teaching English." LSU advertised for someone to teach literature and in the graduate program and some undergraduate courses. Flannery wrote them and said, strange as it may seem, The person you want is a professor of biology at Wesleyan College in Macon, Georgia, Miller Williams." They couldn't believe that, but they couldn't ignore Flannery O'Connor, so they wrote me and said, "Send us something." I sent them some poems, and a couple of stories. And
had you not already published a book of poems by that time?
Yes. And they called me and said, when can you get here?
The 1960s saw a major change in the direction of Miller Williams' career. Based solely on the merits of his writing and without a degree in the subject, Williams became a professor of English literature at Louisiana State University. 4 years later, he joined the faculty of Loyola University in New Orleans, where he founded and edited the New Orleans Review, a journal of contemporary literature and culture. Williams' professional life was finally in sync with his passion for poetry, but there were dramatic changes in his personal life. His marriage to Lucy ended, and by the end of the decade, he had married his second wife, Jordan Hall. Then in 1970, a sequence of events would unfold that would finally lead Williams back to Arkansas.
Jim Whitehead wrote the review of a book, a poem by Sylvia Plath. One of the poems in which he discussed at length was called Ode to My Uterus. And the priests couldn't deal with that.
So it was not long, it was after that that you went to the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville.
Well, a year.
A year after.
Because
that.
I went home that day and said to Jordan, I have something to tell you, because I didn't have a job anymore. It was the end of the school year. And she said, well, I'm on the phone. Go ahead and read the mail, and then we can talk. So I went and opened the mail. The first letter was from the Fulbright Commission. It said, Dear Professor Williams, the person who had accepted our Fulbright professorship at the University of Mexico has died. And we need someone who is a professor of English and speaks Spanish, as I did, and is free next year, which I was. I spoke Spanish because I had lived in Chile for a year. I won the Amon Lowell Traveler Scholarship in Poetry in 1964. So I put the letter down and walked back to Jordan, who was hanging up the phone. And she said, what is it you wanted to tell me? And I told her, we're going to Mexico to live next year. As we finished our year in Mexico, I was contacted by Jim Whitehead, whom I had taught when he was an undergraduate at Millsaps College in Jackson. He called me and asked me if I would come here to teach when I was through in Mexico. I was pleased by that because I didn't have anywhere to go. And we got here on New Year's Day in 71. Gin Whitehead, now Gin Broyles, after Jim died, found us this house that we're in now to rent while we looked for a place to live. And we liked it so much that we bought it. We've been here ever since.
For more than 30 years, Williams was a fixture on the Fayetteville campus. As a professor in the English department, Williams participated in the growth of a creative writing program, which would become recognized as one of the best in the country. He co-founded the University of Arkansas Press, which provided an outlet for Arkansas writers to publish and distribute their work. He founded the university's Master of Fine Arts program in literary translation, co-founded the Comparative Literature program, and taught and mentored emerging poets such as Chelsea Rathbun, Leon Stokesberry, and R.S. Gwynne. To his colleagues, Williams was a man of conscience. He was deeply humanistic and believed that everyone was worth listening to. But beneath it all, Williams was a poet and had been for as long as he could remember.
I learned to read poetry almost as early as I learned to read. And I was trying to write it almost as soon as I learned to write. When I was a Boy Scout, I began to write poetry about being a Boy Scout, and never had any question in my mind about where I wanted my life to take me. I did not even slow down when I changed my major from English and foreign languages to biology outside the classroom. I was the same person doing the same thing.
In 1997, Miller Williams boarded a plane and touched down in Washington, D.C. He had been invited by an old friend and former colleague from the University of Arkansas to read a poem. The old friend was Bill Clinton, and the occasion was his second inauguration as president. Only two inaugural poets had preceded him: Maya Angelou in 1993 at Clinton's first inaugural, and Robert Frost, who was the first at John F. Kennedy's inauguration in 1961.
I got a phone call from a woman, a reporter for some paper, who said she wanted to talk to me because I said, what about? She said, because you're going to read the inaugural poem at Bill Clinton's inauguration. And I said, I'm sorry, you called the wrong person. I had no idea. And so she hung up, a bit irritated, understandably. And just a day later, I was called by Bill Clinton, who asked me if I would read the inaugural poem. He had told someone, obviously, that he was going to call me. And the word got to this reporter who called me. And so then, with my responsibility to write the poem. And it was well received, I think.
It was a cold day that day when you delivered it, I think.
Yes, it was.
Breath frosting. It always is on inaugural day in Washington,
yes.
I think.
I was on the staff of the Breadloaf Writers Conference in Vermont with Robert Frost in the 60s. And he was an inaugural poet then, as you may remember.
He did the inaugural poem at John F. Kennedy's
exactly.
inauguration. The famous one where the wind blows his
right.
poem away.
And he said to me, Miller, if you're ever asked to be the inaugural poet, be sure and paste it down. And I took that simply as a frivolous moment, because I knew that he was the only one of us who was going to be an inaugural poet. But when I was the inaugural poet, I held on to it very tightly and thought about him as I read it.
Because I think it was a windy day then as well.
Yes, it was.
I guess it's always windy probably up on that.
But he did. He did. He responded to his situation in a way I could not have. He recited an appropriate poem of his own that he knew from memory. I could not have done that.
Of history and hope. We have memorized America, how it was born and who we have been and where. In ceremonies and silence, we say the words, telling the stories, singing the old songs.
In 1957, just 5 years after self-publishing his first book of poetry, Williams won the Henry Bellman Award. In 1961, he won the Breadloaf Writers Conference Fellowship, followed in 1963 by the Amy Lowell Traveling Fellowship in Poetry. In all, Williams has collected more than 15 awards for a writing career that spans more than 50 years. In spite of the recognition, the real joy for Williams is in the poems, written on the page or read aloud.
This is one of my most anthologized poems and one of the most requested at my readings. It begins as a is simply a story of an occurrence when Lucinda was 5. The caterpillar. Today, on the lip of a bowl in the backyard, we watched a caterpillar caught in the circle of his larval assumptions. My daughter counted half a dozen times he went around before rolling back and laughing. "I'm a caterpillar. Look." She left him measuring out his slow green way to some place there must have been a picture of inside him. After supper, coming from putting the car up, we stopped to look. Figured he crossed the yard once every hour and left him when we went to bed, wrinkling no closer to my landlord's leaves than when he somehow fell to his private circle. Later, I followed bare feet and door clicks of my daughter to the yard, the bowl a milk-white moonlight eye in the black grass. It died. I said, "Honey, they don't live very long." In bed again, recovered and re-kissed, she locked her arms and mumbling love to mine until turning, she slipped into the deep, bone-bottomed dish of sleep. Stumbling drunk around the rim, I hold the words she said to me across the dark. I think he thought he was going in a straight line. Now, when I remember Robert Frost saying that a poem has to begin as the poet's and end as the reader's, I realized that that poem, in the beginning, is about no one but Lucinda and me. But everyone who reads it or hears it, I think he thought he was going in a straight line, will know who that poem is about. We have all thought we were going in a straight line.
What does this campus mean to you when you walk around this campus?
It brings to mind more than I could express, of course. Most of the people who are important in my life now, I met on this campus. And much of what I am was shaped by what happened to me on this campus.
Did you ever teach in Old Main, which is behind us in this building?
Yes.
You taught some
yes.
classes there?
I taught in Old Main until Kemple was built. But Old Main is still, to me, the heart of the campus and the core of much of my memory of the University of Arkansas. It is a symbol of all that it means to me.
What's a typical day for you now?
I stay busy. I'm writing articles and always working on some books, but mostly I'm working on my memoirs.
You do that chronologically?
Yes.
Or you just come up with memories
no,
as they come
I'm,
down?
No, I'm writing it from the beginning toward the end. I don't know, of course, when the end is going to be. And I have written as if it were an intimate diary up until about the middle of 2002. And I am now having some difficulty moving forward because I've had 5 so-called minor strokes and a grand mal seizure, and I'm having difficulty remembering the details of my life since the middle of 2002. But I'm sorting them out, digging them out, and finding them out. What's happening in the last year or two, I have down pretty well. But during that period of about 6 or 7 years,
as if an eraser had run across the blackboard. And I'm having some difficulty with that. But even that is a story to tell in my memoirs.
Well, I wonder what the major influences in your life and your poetry.
I am ethically and in personality the one that I am because of my parents, Ernest and Angie Williams. I am the poet I am primarily because of the poet John Chardy, and to some degree, Howard Nemiroff, Robert Frost, Elizabeth Bishop. I am the Miller Williams that I am now, in great part because of my wife, Jordan. Those are the major influences in my life.
Thank you.